Okay, everybody, welcome to This Week in Startups. We're going live on a Monday afternoon in the middle of all this OpenAI drama. What a 72 hours. Never seen anything like this in the history of Silicon Valley. It's like we're living through the firing of Steve Jobs, and the drama here is incredibly high. And with me again today to discuss this is Sundeep Mandra, my good friend. He is at Sundeep on Twitter, where we're hosting a Twitter Spaces live. If you want to be invited to these Twitter Spaces live in the future, you can just follow me. I'm x.com/Jason. He's x.com/Sundeep on the website formerly known as Twitter. We also are live right now. If you want to see the video, if you go to youtube.com and search for This Week in Startups, the channel is youtube.com/thisweekin, and you can subscribe to the This Week in Startups channel and hit the alert button, and you will get alerted there when we go live. We are experiencing the most drama we've ever experienced in the history of Silicon Valley startups, I think. This is probably goes beyond Theranos. Certainly in importance goes right up there with SBF. I give this one the edge. With me again to discuss it all and give you a recap of what's happened and our insights is my good friend, Sunny Sundeep Mandra. Sunny, how you doing?
Excellent. You know, been just tracking all of this and seeing what impact it has on my startup as well. So we can talk about that as we after we recap. And exciting times, you know, lots of stuff happening. So let's maybe get right into it.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by NetSuite. Once your business gets to a certain size, the cracks start to emerge. Things you used to do in a day take a week. You deserve a customized solution, and that's NetSuite. Learn more when you download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist, absolutely free, at netsuite.com/twist. LinkedIn marketing. To redeem a free $100 LinkedIn ad credit and launch your first campaign, go to linkedin.com/thisweekinstartups. And Brave. If you're building AI and search-based applications, train your models with the Brave Search API. Get started for free at brave.com/Jason.
I'm up in Tahoe. I was traveling a bit, so I wasn't keeping up with everything. Okay. But I think the first most important thing that I'd like to work backwards to is the resignation of the OpenAI team and the complete utter destruction that's occurred here. I just want to start with that for a second.
Okay.
This company was worth $90 billion. They were about to do a secondary. The 700 or so employees were going to be able to sell some number of them the shares for billions of dollars. That evaporated when the board fired Sam Altman and for not communicating candidly with them. The most obtuse, strange, opaque firing we've ever heard of. Obviously, there's been a bunch of innuendo and theories about, you know, him raising money, et cetera. But I just want to start with your impressions of the destruction of equity value here.
I think it's probably the largest and fastest value destruction we've ever seen. But it's so hard to look at that on its own because there's so many factors playing into the destruction of it. And, you know, sort of you know, the structure of the business, the structure of the board, the and type of investors, the, you know, the governance of this entity. And so you know, I think it's a world, it must be a record of, you know, how much value has been destroyed. The impact on so many employees is really sad and unfortunate. You know, I was reading messages from folks that are in visa processes and all types of other immigration statuses that are, you know.
Explain that to the audience.
Yeah. So, you know, if you are, say, someone who's come over on like an H-1B, that H-1B is typically tied to a business. And depending on the phase of the immigration that you're in, it's impossible for you to leave. And so if, you know, a bunch of people are signing a letter saying they're going to move over to a different company, you can't really do that because your immigration is tied to the company that sponsored your visa.
And this is a very crazy part of this. This is one of the things I find most abhorrent about our immigration system. That's a conversation better left for the squad over at All In.
Yeah.
And we've had that conversation about immigration, but I've been in so many meetings early in my career when I was in the IT business where these H1B visas.
Yep.
And so people would say, hey, we can hire these Indians, et cetera, for cheaper. They're going to work harder because if they say no to a weekend request or a nighttime request, we can kick them out of the country.
Yeah.
And then we'll get them to come here with their family and we'll have basically our knees on their necks. It's gross. I've always hated this about the H-1B visa. I think the H-1B visa should secure you a spot in the country for a year, whether they fire you on day one or maybe plus 1 year. Yeah. You should get at least a year if you get fired or they pull of the company sponsoring you doesn't. I don't understand.
Well, and they're making and they're making changes to it. In this case, I don't know if it's necessarily like a nationals, like Indian nationals, but like a lot of the talent in AI comes out of University of Toronto in Canada. And the and Canada actually has a different visa that's much more straightforward, doesn't have sort of the restrictions. It's called a TN. It's part of the you know, what used to be called NAFTA agreement. And that, but you know, if you want to immigrate to the US, you have to be on an H-1B. It's the only visa that, or one of the few visas that allows you to get a green card on. So a lot of even the Canadians have to, you know, go down an immigration path with that visa.
Okay, so let's just do a quick recap here.
Okay,
For folks who are listening to this as the This Week in Startups podcast, we're going to give you the overview here for people who are listening on Spaces or live on Twitter. I'm sorry, live on YouTube. You're going to know some of this information, but we thought it would be good to start just very quickly, run down the bullet points of what's happened.
Yeah, so just we're going to go like high level, touch on the most important ones since our last Spaces slash live that we did. So when we ended, we saw Kara did a tweet saying, hey, more information to come. There's a lot more to the story. More people are going to quit. Then we saw a few researchers quit right sort of after we finished the podcast, a couple of top researchers ahead of safety as well. Soon after that, we saw a tweet from GDB, Greg Brockman, and he outlined sort of what happened and he outlined a timeline of what happened. And so, and here we go. I think producer Nick has got it up for us here. And so what we saw here was the sequence of events that led to the firing and what a surprise it was. And so it started off with a text from Ilya to Sam to meet at Friday at noon. Sam then joined a Google Meet with the whole board except Greg. And then Ilya told him he was fired. Soon after that, about 20 minutes later, Ilya asked for a call with Greg and told him he was being removed from the board, but asked him to stick around in the company and inform him that, Sam had been fired. And then they published the blog post that we all saw on Friday. So this was sort of the first lens into the sequence of events and how quickly this happened and how it happened, all on virtual kind of Google Meet in this particular case.
And to be clear, we still don't know exactly what the board has been completely silent in 3 or 4 days of this. We don't know what their justification was. We do have some breadcrumbs. Apparently Sam's deal making, and he is a consummate deal maker, it's probably a superpower at this point, is helping people. And we saw that with the outpouring of love, many people saying, hey, you know, and then this is the currency of Silicon Valley. Is in Silicon Valley, it's a tradition to just help people as much as you can. Sam and I and you all grew up in that tradition. We came here, people helped us. We always try to help people, with no expectation of return. And then when something like this blows up, you really do see that people come out with the stories. Hey, this person helped me this way. They helped me that way. Help me at Y Combinator. Help me with an issue in my company. So shout out to Sam with that. I think it's a great testament to the Silicon Valley tradition and his role in it.
Yeah.
But the board said he was not candid, not honest with them. You can give me the exact quote. I keep forgetting their bizarre language they used.
It was in their blog post.
Yeah, we'll pull it up.
It was inconsistent in his communications with the board, was the exact wording. But let's keep going down the timeline because this point, it comes back up. So we just have to maybe keep going through the next 48 hours. So then on Saturday, speculation continues and we're hearing that there's a 5 p.m. deadline for potentially Sam and Greg to rejoin the company and everything can be reset and, everyone will be, happy. We'll just kind of go back to where things were 24 hours before. That deadline comes and passes and, the Twitterverse continues to speculate. We don't really hear anything much more interesting. Let's now then fast forward, and there's a lot of releases coming around what people are hearing from about like the conflicts, about the AI safety stuff, and we'll get into that in a second here. Then let's fast forward to 1 p.m. on Sunday.
Sunday gets interesting. Yeah,
on Sunday, we see 1 p.m., Sam posts a picture of himself wearing a visitor badge inside OpenAI. And, you know, this is tough, right? You know, a company you've founded, a company you've been, you know, a leader with, you know, with all the staff that's there and all the other folks. And so to post this, that really hurts. And I think it's a...
And he's got a grimace on his face. It's pretty... Yeah, one of the things about this whole drama is, you know, the principals are all engaging.
Yeah.
And that is unprecedented. I think maybe the second winner in all of this after Microsoft is X.com.
Yeah.
Because the amount of traffic from this has been insane.
Yeah.
I haven't done a Spaces in years, or maybe a year. This is the second space I've done in 72 hours to support This Week in Startups and get the news out there to the audience. And why not go live?
Yeah.
Live to tape on the pod. Yeah. He is... You got Vinod Khosla getting involved. You got Greg getting involved. The only person not getting involved is this board.
Yeah.
And the board, you know, to not have a statement other than the initial one is insane. So, I mean, that we have to get to here is
Let's keep going. Let's keep continuing. So then we know there's another 5 p.m. deadline, which is, kind of comes by and passes. And then things get really interesting. Around 9 p.m., Ashley Vance and a couple of the folks at Bloomberg
Reporter.
Yep. Leak that a new CEO has been hired, right? Emmett Shear, who was previously the founder and CEO of Twitch, which was ultimately acquired by Amazon. And, you know,
also of note, he was in the Y Combinator class
with
Alexis,
Sam.
Gary Tan for Reddit, and I believe. Sam himself was in that same class with Loop, his mobile location app.
Yeah, so we see this, and basically, what we're hearing again, we're all in the tweets, or I guess reading in the tweets, is folks were surprised because the CTO who had put in place as the interim CEO, she was trying to find a way to bring Greg and Sam back. And the board had independently went and hired Emmett. It's everyone's in shock. Twitter is exploding. People are trying to figure out what's happened. And
Satya, by the way, during all of this, is the back channel was he is infuriated.
Yes.
Because he's put billions of dollars into this. He staked the reputation of Microsoft on this innovation. All of his credibility is in on this. And he found out when we all found out, basically, or 1 minute before it broke.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he is absolutely engaged in this, according to sources. And he is insanely upset.
Well, look, there was a drop of the stock price on Friday after this announcement. Right.
How much?
Microsoft. It was like somewhere like maybe 2%, like 1.5 to 2%, which is
tens of billions.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Microsoft has tied their revenue and future products to OpenAI.
Yes.
That is what they've pitched Wall Street, and it's what they've pitched consumers and developers. And consumers, enterprise, and developers are their three-legged stool.
Yes.
They went all in with developers for the OpenAI platform, consumers for Bing, and then enterprise for co-pilots on Office.
Yeah.
Like so, super all in.
Yeah. So, you know, you can imagine, what's on Satya's mind is the market open, right? He's got to get a message to the market, you know, running one of the most valuable companies in the world. This is an important part of their strategy. What are they going to tell the world what's happened? You know, the current situation is probably not going to be acceptable to the market. It's going to cause a massive hit to Microsoft stock. So then what we see around just before midnight is a message posted by Satya. And Satya basically mentions here is that he's committed to the partnership with OpenAI. So you're reading through it, great, and what you'd expect. And he touches on everything they announced at Ignite and making sure their customers and partners are okay, and getting to know the new CEO, Emmett Shear. What we then see is the second part of this message is that Sam and Greg are going to be joining.
Look at the view
count. Yeah. 32.2 million views. It's crazy. Pretty crazy. You know, and shout out to X, right? No other platform could really, you know, you couldn't even probably get that in a press release. And so what you see here is Satya mentioning that both Sam and Greg will be joining Microsoft to lead a new advanced AI research team. And again,
this is mind-blowing.
Exactly.
Now, I mean, and just a programming note, we have bestie David Sachs now on the Twitter spaces. Welcome, David.
Hey, pal.
Hey, David.
Hey, buddy. We're going to let him go through the timeline here and then interject whenever you feel like you have a comment.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay, so then now we're basically, you know, it's going from midnight, Monday morning, right? And so midnight Sunday to Monday morning. And then around 4 a.m. or 5 a.m., we see a message from Ilya. And, you know, I basically said this has got to be the mea culpa of this particular, you know, century. Where he is saying, I regret my participation in the board's actions. He didn't want to harm the company. I love everyone and everything that we built together, and I want the company to come together. And so this then leads to a letter that is published that is signed by, initially, 10 or 15 employees. That's all we saw in the letter that's been released. And the latest update is it's been signed by upwards of 700 plus employees of the 750 that work there. So effectively, 90%+.
All right. Scaling a business is really hard. We all know that. When you're growing, things that used to take an hour, it's going to take a week. To avoid getting bogged down, you need to remain efficient. And one way to stay efficient is to know your KPIs, key performance indicator. KPIs are critical for startups to understand. And right now, you can download NetSuite's popular KPI checklist for free at netsuite.com/twist. And a SaaS startup that you're running, you might know some of the KPIs, monthly active users, MRR, ARPU, your average revenue per user. And then NetSuite's KPI checklist is going to teach you how to identify and understand all your strategic objectives, how to collect and analyze data, and so much more. Identifying KPIs will make you more efficient. It's going to make your team hit their targets, which then unlocks all kinds of things like funding and hiring. And right now, increasing margins and getting profitable is the name of the game. Here's your call to action. NetSuite is everything you need, all in one place. Download NetSuite's KPI checklist for free at netsuite.com/twist. That's netsuite.com/TWIST to get your KPI checklist.
I'll just go to Sachs on this one. Sachs, what is your take at this point with the resignations and then this power move by Satya?
In terms of what?
Unprecedented nature of this value destruction. Take it where you want to go.
Well, yeah, I think it is unprecedented. It's not unprecedented for a founder or CEO to be fired by a board. I mean, that does happen. Nobody likes it, but it does occasionally happen. However, it only happens when a company is in crisis and things have gone off the rails or there's some sort of criminal misconduct. It takes, something really egregious to get a founder or CEO fired. And here, not only do we not have that, I mean, OpenAI was on a trajectory to be one of the next great companies of Silicon Valley. I mean, it was, I guess they were working on a $90 billion financing round, up from 30 just a short while ago. If you had asked most people in Silicon Valley what the next $1 trillion software company was likely to be, I think everybody would have said OpenAI. I mean, it was one of those companies like a Google, like a Microsoft, like a Facebook or Meta, where, they had basically figured out something very fundamental. They had engineered the next kind of technology platform shift. And so OpenAI was one of those generational companies. And everything was calm. Everything was working. I mean, this is a company on top of its game and a founder, apparently, who was at the top of his game. And so I think this kind of came out of the blue on Friday. And so when they put out that announcement on Friday, saying that Sam hadn't been candid, which, as far as these things go, was a very, that was a pretty harsh statement. I mean, normally when boards put out statements about a founder getting fired, they don't say much. And that was, as far as these things go, a pretty harsh statement. So I think we were all kind of bracing, waiting for the other shoe to drop to find out that there was some horrible misconduct that had occurred here. And then, you know, with each passing day, that hadn't come out. And then, like you said, Sonny, Ilya put out this mea culpa. So now there's no reason to believe it even exists. And so I think that's what's so inexplicable about this is there doesn't appear to have been any reason for this. And this is just, it seems like a case of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Again, this is not a company in crisis. This was a company that was on its way to being, you know, a centicorn company and maybe a $1 trillion company one day. The company that basically, I mean, when ChatGPT launched on November 30th last year, that ushered in this whole wave of AI that we're seeing everyone build on now. I mean, this was the next great technology platform shift. I mean, all of Silicon Valley has basically swarmed around this. And so, you know, this was not a company that needed to make a change. It had no problems whatsoever. It was all kind of blue skies and up from here. And then you had this thing happen on Friday. And I think that's what's so inexplicable.
Well, let's do a little speculation there. That's a great summary. And I think if you look at the wording of what they said, you would think, just logically in game theory, if they had a real case against Sam, like some actionable item, they wouldn't have gone out with some meek, you know, excuse, this milquetoast excuse that he wasn't perfectly candid. And since they're all getting destroyed, I would think they would have leaked the board by now to defend themselves. Hey, Sam did X thing that is, and listen, it's fairly clear now that if there was some smoking gun here that he'd done something unbelievably horrible or fraudulent, let's say, it would have come out by now. So what is your theory, Sax, of what these people were thinking?
Can I just add one thing before David jumps in there, which is Emmett, in his message, made very clear that the board hasn't even explained to him why they fired Sam. And he wants to kick off an investigation to understand what happened.
my head's spinning.
Yeah.
My first act as new CEO will be to investigate why the last CEO was fired and why I was hired. Why wouldn't you just ask that question during your job interview?
Yeah. What do you think happened in terms of why the board jumped the fence, went rogue, and fired him? What's your best speculation, Sax? Just putting all the pieces together and looking at the chessboard?
Well, let me just first say that I think that taking a drastic action and then clamming up and not explaining it is the worst possible strategy. I mean, I think that if you take a drastic action, you have to explain it. And if this was about values, if the company was going in a different direction from a values perspective than it was originally created with, then that would be all the more reason to explain it, because you basically want to write your manifesto or counter manifesto on what the real values of this company should be. But obviously, they didn't do that. And again, if there's some sort of horrible criminal misconduct, I think that, you know, you gotta get something out there to explain what it is that you've done. But again, with each passing day that there's no explanation, you begin to come to the conclusion that there was no well thought out reason for this.
And I guess the big piece of evidence we have towards that, Sonny, is that Ilya came out with a tweet at 5 a.m. Pacific time Monday morning, right before markets open, saying, "I deeply regret my participation in the board's actions. I never intended to harm OpenAI. I love everything we've built together, and I will do everything I can to reunite the company." What's the theory here, Sonny or Sax?
Yeah, look, I can't understand, you know, how people can change their minds, and everyone has a right to do it. But then to have it go through so much public turmoil for the company, you know, this should have been part of the process. And the only thing I can really speculate from this is this just shows sort of a lack of maturity of the governance structure of the company to basically, this is the kind of thing you want to double and triple and quadruple check and maybe get some external folks involved as well and get their opinion. And so it's really disappointing. I mean, nice to see that he changed and hopefully that saves things here, but disappointing in terms of how the company was run. And it kind of makes you wonder what else is happening there. But Sax, what are your thoughts?
My main thought is when I saw that is, it made me immediately think, well, there's no smoking gun here. I mean, again, if you're going to fire the founder CEO of the next great software company in Silicon Valley, again, you know, $90 billion company on its way to a trillion, who started this whole AI wave, everything on the surface appeared to be as calm, you know, as, you know, as calm can be, like no indication whatsoever that anything's going wrong. So if you're going to fire that person out of the blue, then there has to be a really good reason, you know, not just like some minor reason, like a smoking gun. So then if you retract and recant and make an apology, then it indicates, well, there can't have been anything there. Can't just have been like a difference of opinion over something unimportant. There had to be something factual. So my interpretation of that mea culpa is that there is nothing factual there.
Yeah. But I've come to the conclusion, Sax, that it's two things. One, they were a little upset at Sam for doing these deals, whether it's the Johnny Ive, you know, new phone, AI phone, or the new chipset with, you know, maybe some investors in Mina, whatever it was, that was tweaking them. And then maybe there was a little bit of tweaking with his public profile, possibly. But then I think the second major item that was tweaking them was the pace at which he was releasing things. And when he released agents and apps that we talked about, that's super powerful. And the agents are a trigger for the people who are concerned about AI spinning out of control. Once you fire up agents and they start acting, you know, on that road toward autonomy, that's what makes all these doomers, as they're being called, or decelerists, get triggered. So it sounds to me like I'm going with what you said, you know, it's philosophy.
If it was the second one, Jason,
yes.
My God, man, stick to your guns. I mean, if you really think this is going to end civilization, then like write a public letter explaining what you did. Don't like just meekly say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't think it through.
Yes, it would be time to come clean. Yeah,
it's probably not that. I think it is just tied to focus and effort. Like if you take a step back and look at everything that's come out, it's very clear that a number of people that went to join, and you know, Elon kicked this off, right? Started it as a nonprofit, put, you know, I think $40 million in. And a lot of one of the videos that, you know, I watched over the weekend was where he talks about recruiting Ilya, and as it was one of the hardest things he ever did, and it led to his you know, fracturing of a relationship with Sergey over at Google. And so think about what it took to recruit him, and maybe not make it about economics, because he was recruiting him into a nonprofit at that point. And you have to imagine he's brought other people from his past research lab and Google and other places. And so when you start seeing this commercial stuff happening, you can understand if you've been brought over and it wasn't economic, and you're starting to see, you know, an app store emerge and all these things happen, and you want to focus on your research and forwarding AGI, perhaps, you know, that is really what's causing havoc.
Yeah, I mean, look, that could be it. Well, I guess we won't know. I guess what I'm saying is that if the motivation here was based on values, in the way you're saying, you know, if the board's position had been that Sam is exploiting the technology in a way that makes us uncomfortable, either because he's exploiting it for personal gain or, you know, more importantly, that they're developing these agents that could get out of control, we're worried about AI safety and all that kind of stuff, then why wouldn't you go out there and say it? I mean, make your argument, make your case, defend yourself. Don't just meekly go quiet and then retract and recant. I mean, was this a threat to civilization or not?
All right, business-to-business founders need to understand two things. Hey, B2B marketing is hard. It's really hard. And number two, LinkedIn ads makes it so simple for you. Why is business-to-business marketing so hard? Well, decision makers are hard to get to. They know how to hide. They know how to not get annoyed. They're very, very clever about this. Trust me, I'm one of those decision makers. And they're so hard to identify and target on the internet. They're stealth. We can't find them anywhere. Well, actually, you can find them one place. That's LinkedIn. There are 70 million decision makers on LinkedIn. You know, as a decision maker, we have to be there. And 10 million of those 70 million are in the C-suite, chief security officer, chief strategy officer, CEO, CFO, COO. Ooh, that's like 1% of the total audience of executives. And they have to be on LinkedIn because that's where they find talent. That's where they get information. That's where they get the talented people to come to apply to jobs at their company. And that's where they find talented people, right? So while they're there, you get to use LinkedIn ads to get your message in front of the right people. This is very, very simple. LinkedIn equals business. Business equals LinkedIn. So I want you to get started today, and you will understand very quickly why LinkedIn is the place to be for B2B. We're going to give you $100 in credits, so you don't have to spend any money. You get to test it yourself. LinkedIn.com/thisweekinstartups. No spaces, no dashes. You type out those four beautiful words, This Week in Startups, and you get $100. Terms and conditions do apply. Yeah, it's clearly not a threat to civilization. And therefore, these guys on the board, the folks on the board jumped the fence. They did something rash. They're completely inexperienced based on what I've seen, or probably have never been on the board of a $1 trillion company or a $100 billion company. With the exception of Adam D'Angelo, obviously Quora is a very important site and he's a pretty experienced
CTO of Facebook before that.
CTO of Facebook. So. I mean, he's legit. But this is a dysfunctional board built on a dysfunctional corporate structure. And if they did have a split with Sam, there are 10 different ways you could have handled this that would have been better. The easiest one would be to say, Sam, it's pretty obvious that you want to be doing these other things. We as a board have decided we want to have a full-time CEO who doesn't have conflicts. Therefore, we'd like you to consider, you know, maybe moving into another position and segueing, you know, over the next year. And what would be a good way for us to approach this collaboratively? To, you know, make it great for you and obviously not have any reputation damage. We certainly don't want to damage OpenAI or the foundation. So how can we collaborate on this? Instead, they shivved him in the middle of the night on Google Meet. I mean, the ultimate of insults.
So Sax, how would you
have used Zoom? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, have you used Google Meet?
I mean, that's janky.
Microsoft put $10 billion in the company. They couldn't even be forced to use Teams.
Or how about in person? How about we do this, you know, at a dinner, at an offsite, or, you know, we have a thoughtful one-on-one. We do a walk and talk. If you're going to ask someone Sam Altman's profile, who put his life into this and his reputation, to move out of that top spot, how would you handle that, Zach, if you did have this philosophical arrangement? What would be the proper protocol here?
Well, look, we don't even know that they did. I mean, we're speculating about something where they haven't even provided an explanation. I mean, again, based on Ilya retracting, it seems like there is no explanation. But look, I think that if one were to look for a root cause of this whole thing that goes beyond, you know, just the immediate events of the last few days, I would say it has to be the nonprofit structure, the original nonprofit structure, and this funky corporate structure they've been set up with, this weird board that consists of a bunch of people who don't really have skin in the game, like no VCs, as far as I can tell, and people with, you know, fancy titles and effective altruism or whatever, basically people whose main credentials seem to be liberal arts majors and stuff like that. I mean, for one thing, I guess when this first happened, I was really surprised that Sam could even be fired, because I just kind of assumed that he had control over the board. I mean, as the principal founder CEO, I just figured he had control. So I was very surprised that something like this could even happen. You know, on our pod, I speculated that he must have ownership in this. It just can't be the case that he has zero ownership. And I guess I was wrong about that. I mean, I guess he really doesn't have equity and he really didn't have control. I mean, I guess that's probably the most surprising thing to me about the whole thing. And I guess that springs from the fact that it was set up in this funky nonprofit way. And I just think it just all goes back to the point that you can't do better than a Delaware C Corp. You know, whenever I see founders trying to innovate on structure, legal structure, I know it's going to be a disaster. Like, that's not where founders should be innovating. Founders should be innovating on product and technology, not in coming up with, you know, newfangled corporate structures and org charts and governance and all this kind of stuff. And I think there was a skepticism before ChatGPT came out on November 30th last year. I think there was kind of a general skepticism about what OpenAI was doing, not because, you know, the people involved weren't seen as serious, but just it was just seen as bizarre. Like the idea that
a nonprofit foundation could somehow be on the cutting edge of technology and lead to some sort of, you know, technological revolution. I think most people would have thought that was the really fanciful idea. I mean, nonprofits have their place in the world, but it's just not generally pushing the boundaries of discovery and innovation, right? It's more about distributing products that already exist to needy people. So in any event, I mean, the structure was always really weird. And it appears that the weirdness never fully went away. I mean, they tried to paper over it. They tried to create these complicated crisscrossing structures that allowed Microsoft and others to invest. But they never fully solved the problem that the alignment that was set up in the beginning just wasn't very good. And I think one of the alignment problems is that Sam didn't have a proper comp package. And I think the board wasn't set up as a proper board. I mean, you know, for all the shit that VCs get, like, you know, VCs, and I think you made this point, Jason, VCs wouldn't fire a founder where everything is going up and to the right. Like, that's suicidal.
Quite the opposite. What did they do with Elon when it was up and to the right and he was fully vested? They created a comp package to keep him there, right?
You're talking about Tesla, yeah.
I'm talking about Tesla.
Tesla created a comp package where the better Tesla did in terms of his public valuation, the more stock he got. So he had these very far out of the money stock options. I think Tesla was worth, I don't know, tens of billions at that point.
Yep.
And his comp package went all the way up to $600 billion, meaning that if the company would ever be valued at $600 billion, he would vest additional owners. So they gave him these far out of the money stock options. So the better the company did, the more ownership he got. Yeah, I mean, everyone had skin in the game. Everyone was aligned. I mean, this is the beauty of the, I think of the way that the startup ecosystem works from just a legal and structural point of view is I don't think that Silicon Valley would work without the innovation of the joint stock company, right? You create a company and you have widespread ownership by founders, VCs, and employees, and everybody's aligned, everyone has skin in the game. And then, you know, within that framework, the founders run the company and typically have very broad latitude to do what they want. And everyone's comfortable with that because everyone's aligned. And when everything is up and to the right and working, no one messes with that. It's only when things descend to some sort of crisis or, you know, there's some sort of criminal issue or something really, really horrible, do you ever, like, typically get a big intervention. But otherwise, when things are working, you just leave them alone. Because, again, everybody's aligned for that big outcome.
This is the key point. You know, the structure here, Sonny, in Silicon Valley has been perfected over decades. And it's been battle tested, right? And the Delaware C laws are the, you know, the manifestation and the codification of that. This Franken structure they came up with, you know, which I think they modeled off of Mozilla and the Mozilla Foundation, because they started printing hundreds of millions of dollars in Google AdSense revenue. This is the original sin. Then you put a bunch of, you know, non-stock price incented individuals on the board, and you get this weird outcome. You can say all the terrible things you want in the world about capitalism and VCs, but the focus...
Let me just add something to that, okay? There was a widespread belief, or a belief that a lot of people indulged in, and maybe even Sam, and this could have been his downfall, that somehow OpenAI would be a more trustworthy company if it did not intend to make a profit. This was sort of the premise behind all this foundation nonsense, is that if OpenAI does not intend to turn a profit, we can all trust it more.
Mm.
And you heard this repeated over and over in many different ways. And I think even Sam may have bought into this. And I think ultimately that was the undoing here.
This is if we level up the conversation, Sachs, if you think about operating systems for building things in the world, for changing humanity, say what you want about capitalism, but it aligns perfectly with hard-driving people and capital allocators. It aligns perfectly. And it is a more trustworthy situation because you can trust that everybody's working towards increasing the share price. And the share price obviously represents something in the world. It represents progress. So again, you can hate capitalism. It's imperfect, but it's the best system for building companies and changing humanity in the best way. And I think that's ultimately what we'll see here is this is going to be, what do you call it when you have like an ultimate decision? There's a word for this, but it would be the ultimate decision on capitalism versus nonprofits?
Just to buttress your point there, let me quote Adam Smith. What Adam Smith wrote, this is in the 1700s, is that it is not from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we expect our dinner, but from their regard to their own interest. In other words, we can trust people in capitalism, not because they're going to do something altruistic for us, but because they're going to pursue their own self-interest. And in so doing, they're going to produce something that we all want. I mean, that was basically what Adam Smith said.
Right. And so if you don't, what happens?
It's that profit interest that allows us to understand their motivations and to align their incentives with something that's good for all of us. Now, as soon as you take away that profit incentive, say, for example, by putting a bunch of effective altruists on your board, you know, now you don't really know what it is that they're optimizing for. They claim they're optimizing for some principle or other, but it may just be, you know, some crazy idea in their head that we shouldn't trust, or it might be some bureaucratic incentive. These people,
it's for social credit. Let's call it what it is. They're doing
it
for
social credit, or they
want social credit.
Some resume packing item, or some who knows. It's some sort of, but you're never going to take human incentives, motivations out of something. You're just going to replace the profit motive with some other kind of motive that might be even more nefarious. And if you're wondering, like, how did this happen? I think one of the reasons why it's so inexplicable is because we don't know the motivations of these board members.
And you pointed out before, Sam did not have a package. This is, if you were on a board and your CEO who was doing this deal making was so important and critical, and they didn't own 10, 20% of the company, and their future incentives were not aligned, and you didn't have them locked up for the next 5 years, that would be job one of the board, is get Sam a package and lock him down. And maybe the reason he was doing these side deals was because he wasn't compensated at OpenAI.
Totally. I think that's an excellent point. Is, look, we don't know what side deals he was doing, but he was running around making a lot of deals. I guess there's been a couple that have been reported. But if you're worried about that, if that was the worry, re-up the guy massively. You know, give him a huge stock package. You know, give him the Elon package that they did at Tesla.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know, so that he's singularly focused on making OpenAI successful. But again, this goes back to the motivations of this foundation and this funky setup they had. It's not clear what it is they were optimizing for. I mean, I guess some vision of societal good, but who judges that, you know? And so at the end of the day, it just becomes a highly political thing where you got a room full of people and, you know, they're optimizing for some sort of, you know, bizarre political dynamic.
Are you building the next great AI product? Well, if so, you know how expensive APIs can be for their model training data. Training AI is pricey. That's a fact. We all know it. So you have to try the Brave Search API. Yes, I am talking about Brave, the privacy browser that I am obsessed with. Brave's browser has 65 million users. Think about how much data that drives for Brave Search, which is the only global scale independent search index outside of big tech. And that index is available to anyone with the Brave Search API. The Brave Search API can power your chatbots and train your models, inform answers to real-time queries, and it will serve images, web results, and even rich text snippets. The Brave Search API features an easy, intuitive data structure, and its data is populated by real human interaction, not web crawlers, all for a fraction of the cost of the major players. It's free for up to 2,000 queries per month, with paid plans for as little as a $3 CPM. That's cost per thousand. So if you're building a next-gen AI app or chatbots, you gotta try the Brave Search API. Get started today. Brave.com/Jason. Ooh, Jason's brave. I like it. Brave.com/Jason and get the browser while you're at it. It is awesome. It's also got a VPN built in. That's pretty cool.
David, a big question now for, I think, a lot of the folks that tune into this regular show with me and J.Cal is, you know, portfolio companies. You guys at Kraft have made a really big push into, you know, AI companies that are building around AI. And obviously most of them are building an open AI. How are you rethinking that? And, you know, what have been the discussions inside Kraft around, you know, what should companies do and you know, that are reliant on this? What are your initial thoughts there?
Well, I think that I don't think that's going to change. I mean, I think that what OpenAI did with the launch of ChatGPT was this huge proof of concept for large language models. And now that they've
kind of opened the door, like no one's going to go back. So, you know, I think probably 70-80% of what we do these days is you know, AI related, at least for new investments. We're kind of probably 70-80% is looking at it something AI related. I don't think that's going to change for anybody. But in terms of what do I think the practical impact on the ecosystem will be, I think this is probably going to be a huge leveler. I mean, you figure OpenAI was probably a year ahead of anybody else, including, you know, some number of months ahead of the whole open source ecosystem. So if OpenAI is kind of unraveling and then, you know, Sam and his team have to kind of put it all back together again and some new division of Microsoft, that's going to take some period of time. I don't know how long it's going to be, 6 months, a year, whatever. While that's happening, everyone else is going to catch up. So I think that the practical impact of all of this is going to be a big leveling in the startup ecosystem. Obviously, this will be hugely beneficial for OpenAI's competitors, whether it's open source as a movement or maybe some of these other competitive foundation models. Obviously, it's probably going to be better for them. And then you figure there's a bunch of startups in the ecosystem that, you know, that appear to have some kind of privileged access to OpenAI. I don't think there were a lot of them, but there were startups that were sort of anointed by OpenAI. I mean, I think OpenAI had a fund that was making investments in the ecosystem. And I think those companies got a lot of momentum and went on to do really high-priced future rounds based on the expectation that they were kind of first and would stay in the lead because of this, again, privileged access. And so if the rug's getting pulled out from OpenAI or it's just the whole thing's getting kind of level set now, then those startups will be impacted as well.
And David, just building on that, like Chamath had a tweet earlier today, right, where he talked about so the impact of small smaller companies building as startups building versus large companies and where large companies will get caught up in their legal departments. Do you see now what's happened with OpenAI? Obviously, they were operating like a startup. Do you see them slowing down and does that open opportunity for others to kind of come from the startup side of the world versus, you know, we know the larger companies are here. Google is here and obviously Microsoft's been there, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think that in terms of creating foundation models, that seems like a big company activity. It's just so expensive, right? But the open source ecosystem has a lot of startup activity in it. And so, you know, if the open source ecosystem now gets further ahead because OpenAI slowed down, maybe that could redound to the benefit of some startups that are playing in that ecosystem. I think it's really hard to see. I think for startups that were building on top of OpenAI, this probably slows them down because it, you know, there's a whole product roadmap that was about to be built at OpenAI for developers, and that's been derailed now, at least from where we're sitting at this moment. And maybe this all kind of gets put back together. So I think that to the extent that you are competing with OpenAI, this is probably certainly a net positive for you. But if you are building on top of OpenAI, it's probably going to create some problems for you. At a minimum, you're going to want to diversify and build on top of multiple models, which people are doing anyway. But so I think it kind of depends on where you're sitting in the ecosystem.
Jacob, what do you think?
I got my first email from one of our companies. It's called Roam Around, and they are API partners, like everybody else, with OpenAI. And they basically just told their investors, hey, we have other models we're using. If OpenAI collapses or we have problems, don't worry about it, basically. So that's the first time I saw founders who maybe had a dependency here, or maybe people perceive they have a dependency, then letting their investors know, don't worry, we've got, you know, escape hatches here. It's not going to be, you know, a killer for us. I do think most people would say the technical advantage, when I asked people on the pod that OpenAI had, most people would say 6 to 18 months lead time. So let's put it at 12. Then you have their momentum, which was people wanted to work there. Sam's cult of personality, the other leaders being a cult of personality, they had a lot of momentum. And momentum in startups, in poker, you know, in the entertainment industry, momentum is very important. And the momentum they had was, if you're talented, that would be at the top of the list of places you wanted to go. If you're an investor, that's one of the places you wanted to own shares in. Momentum is so important in startups for so many reasons. And that momentum is now gone. And now it's the opposite. It's gone from momentum to being a risk factor. So the secondary that Thrive was going to do, that's off. No, that was a momentum-driven secondary. People wanting to pick, hey, who do I align myself with as a startup or a corporation? That momentum is gone. They're not the lead player anymore. They're the incapacitated player. They're the dangerous choice to make. So now Claude or Bard or Falcon, you know, or an open source project, whatever's on Hugging Face, that becomes the default. So this has been cataclysmic in the damage it's done to OpenAI's lead. That 18-month lead, I think now is zero and or a negative. And I think you can't understate that.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you're right. And like part of the momentum they had was in hiring, right? I mean, they were slurping up so much of the, you know, tech talent. Yep. And, you know, AI engineers, the hardest job to hire for. And a lot of it was continuing to go to OpenAI. And now that momentum's going to slow down or stop. I mean, presumably if Sam and his team set up a new entity at Microsoft, they will still attract a lot of talent to that. And the people who are loyal to Sam on that team are going to go. But, you know, if you're an engineer now, you have to really think about, is this such an obvious choice anymore?
Okay, let's go to predictions here. Sunny, you've been doing a great job here moderating, but I want to hear your prediction. What happens in the next 72 hours? Everybody has basically said they're going to quit. I thought half the people would leave. It's like 90% have said they're quitting. So that means OpenAI is dead. Microsoft says, hey, they have this option for everybody to go there. And then, of course, there is the reinstatement of Sam and the firing of this incompetent board. What do you think, Sandeep Madra, happens next?
I think the company reemerges. Yeah, that's my prediction. I think
OpenAI,
Sam and, Greg and the other folks are
Return of the King.
Return of the King. And, there is a real, conversation around governance structure, nonprofit, profit, and all that becomes clear forever. I think, you know, that's where I go.
Sachs, prediction next 72 hours.
I think there's what should happen and then there's what actually happens. And I think what should happen is probably about 50-50. I think what should happen is that OpenAI brings Sam back because, I mean, like you said, the whole company's basically now signed a petition saying they're going to leave if he's not brought back. So you bring him back. That means that the whole board's got to go. He's got to reconstitute it. I would go further and say they have to get rid of this whole fakakta nonprofit structure that created all the problems to begin with. Give Sam a proper comp package, you know, get rid of all these crazy crisscrossing dotted lines and so forth, and just normalize the structure of this company. That's what should happen. What actually happens, I don't know. I think it's probably 50-50 at this point, whether they bring Sam back or not. If they don't, I think we all know that it's going to implode. But again, with each passing day that they don't do the obvious thing, it's more likely that the obvious thing won't happen. I mean, look, I thought it was obvious by, I don't know, what was it, like Saturday or Sunday that they needed to bring Sam back because the whole company was groundswelling, you know, in favor of him. And then they did this like total non sequitur of hiring this like Emmett guy, like out of nowhere to be CEO. So
that was wild.
So it's like, wait, they didn't get the message?
Yeah, and David, I don't know if you saw this, but on Twitter, Benioff, like everyone is out, like every
the
AI.
Sharks are out, blood in the water.
So if you allow that transfer to happen to Microsoft, then, you know, pretty much you're doing that, you know, for money at that point, I guess, right? Because you're going to try to get some comp package from them. But I think there's so many options for those folks that they're going to weigh those things. Yeah.
There's so many options. And now you're just kind of working for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Is that really? I mean, the bloom is off the rose, you know? The bloom is off the rose. Yeah. So I'm not saying that they won't be able to reconstitute a pretty impressive team over there, but it's not going to be this undisputed leader. You know, they're going to have to spend, I don't know, 6 months just getting back to where they were at least. So this is the great leveler. I think my TLDR is that this is going to be a giant leveler in the whole space because the company that was running away with it is now, you know, hamstrung or imploded.
Yeah, that's correct, Sachs. The entire poker table's been flipped. The blackjack table got flipped. Chips, drinks, cards. It's anybody's game now. It's literally, if OpenAI implodes, anybody's game. Anybody could win AI. And that actually might be better for the marketplace if you think about it.
Jason, I got to ask both you guys, Jason and David, XAI, right? You guys are close. You guys understand it. Obviously, Elon started OpenAI, put the first money in. What does this mean for XAI from your guys' perspective?
Zach, you go first.
Look, I mean, I don't think XAI would exist if OpenAI had done right by Elon in the first place. You know, he did put in the first $40 million and he ended up with no shares. Now, I don't know that that was necessarily nefarious. Again, I think it was a result of this crazy nonprofit structure they created. So, but I think that as part of, you know, correcting this mistake they made on Friday, I think they should undo all the shenanigans. You know, let's fix all the shenanigans that happened here. Again, normalize the structure. I think Elon should get shares for his $40 million that went in. That's what should have happened. It should have happened a while ago. But now I think
Sam should get a package.
And Sam should get a package for sure. That's what should have happened, is they should have cleaned this stuff up a long time ago. But you know what happens is no one ever wants to clean anything up. They just want to keep papering on top of it. And so they papered a bunch of crap on top of the original mistakes, and now it's come back to bite them in the ass. But look, in terms of what does this mean for X.AI, I mean, so that company's already been created now. It's off to the races. And so the genie's out of the bottle. And I mean, it's going to be good for them, right? It's got to be good for them.
Yeah. It felt to me, Sonny, when we played with it, that they were 6 months behind, maybe. Maybe you argue nine, something like that. And now, if this continues in chaos, it's going to take 6 to 12 months for all the dust to settle. There's going to be so many lawsuits. Every employee who didn't get to sell in the secondary offering is going to be able to sue the board. Sam is going to be able to sue the board. Microsoft's going to be able to sue the board. The investors who invested in this are going to be able to sue everybody. So the number of lawsuits that'll come out of this for lost money, remember, they raised $300 or $400 million, right, from investors other than Microsoft. This is going to be, and then imagine the discovery. Imagine how much chaos that will cause.
You know, it'll be a full employment program for lawyers for sure. But Jason, play this out a couple of moves beyond that, right? So now you've got this. Let's assume like Sam doesn't come back, right? Mm-hmm. And so you've got 90% of the employees have left, and you've got this shell entity that's running OpenAI. But there's no one there. So they're barely keeping the lights on. And then meanwhile, there's all these like lawsuits or threats of lawsuits, and they're getting all sorts of legal letters. What do you think that management does at that point? I think they just kind of sell it all to Microsoft.
Yeah, they quit. Sell it for parts. Shut it down.
For Saatchi to be their white knight just to clean up the whole mess. So then Microsoft just acquires, you know, whatever's left, which will be substantial. I mean, you're talking about the source code here to, you know, OpenAI, which... you know, it's doing over $1 billion in revenue, and it's got, you know, thousands of, they've got over 1 million developers building on top of it. I mean, this is a massive asset.
Huge asset. And here's the other thing, Sax, you know this. If this was going to go that route, they would need to, their fiduciary, which using the word fiduciary with these idiots, I'm just call it what it is, you know, I don't think they know how to spell the word. They would need to run a process, and they would need to let 5 or 6 people bid on it. And then what are those people bidding on? The source code that Microsoft also has access to, but not AGI. The Franken structure of this makes it really hard for people to bid on it. But you know, Benioff might come, Google might come, Apple might come and want to bid on this. Zuck's going to bid on it. So now you have to go with whoever bids the most in order to get the shareholders who've been wronged their money. This is so chaotic. There is no way to run a process because who assumes the liability? And I guarantee you the IRS is firing off massive investigations into what happened here because they don't like when people run circles or make them look foolish. And I think this is starting to make them look foolish. Nonprofit generates $190 billion in equity value. Then there's an auction for the assets. It's insanity.
Well, I think the way it was structured, and there are versions of the corporate org chart that have been floating around, you know, X, is that you've got this foundation that is a nonprofit, and then it somehow controls an LLC, and that LLC is a for-profit entity, but whose membership interest is kind of controlled by this foundation. And then the investors came into that LLC, and Microsoft had some sort of cap profit arrangement with that LLC. So I guess what would happen is that if you could sell off the parts, that the LLC is the entity that would be sold. So I guess either you just sell the LLC as a whole and everyone sells their membership interests, or the LLC sells all the assets, okay, and then distributes the cash to basically dissolves, right? So I think that's probably what you'd do is you'd have the LLC sell all the assets, take in a bunch of cash, and then you distribute all the cash to the membership interests of the LLC and wind it down. And then what happened is you end up with this foundation, the OpenAI Foundation, has got a bunch of cash sitting in it.
And it's
some nonprofit, controlled by, I don't know, whoever's still in control of this board, I guess, would control all that money. That is a big pot of money there.
This is what an absolute utter mess.